As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
There's only one word to kick this off. Wow.
Timely intervention. And now a chance to escape. And there are two against one in Manchester United's favour. Garnacho to Ahmad. Ahmad for the semi-final.
It was crazy. It was chaotic. It was absolutely incredible. This is Talk of the Devils, the Athletic's podcast dedicated to Manchester United. And we have a full house here to pore over every detail of potentially the greatest FA Cup tie in Manchester United's history. What a game. What a result. What an atmosphere. Amazing. Good morning, Laurie. Good morning, Andy. Good morning, Carl. Laurie, you've even cancelled paternity leave for this podcast. That's how carried away you've got with the result. Welcome back.
Hiya, thanks for having me. Can I just say that I was already intending to come on this podcast before that match and the result. I'm not just a glory hunting podcaster, I promise.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, okay, fine. I've come steaming in, haven't I? I was even trying to do it last night.
You were requested by multiple people. Let's not be coy here. Multiple people say, get him on the pod.
He was fighting past stewards, trying to crawl his way across the south stand to get to the press box. Are we doing the pod, lads? Get out, Mr. Whitwell. Out you go. Andy, you were there as well, down pitch side in my seat. How did it feel? What an atmosphere. Incredible.
Yeah, it was top. I wasn't actually pitch side. I was a bit further back because I like to analyse from a distance and the optimal viewing is a little bit raised. I'm talking nonsense. It was brilliant. I wasn't expecting it. Even during the game, I thought United would lose. I just felt that way.
Well, it looked that way for a while. Yeah. We might talk about that in a bit, but don't pop the bubble just yet.
No, brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. I call it the once a year Manchester United high. I've hardly slept last night and it doesn't matter.
That's the spirit, Andy. Once a year, yeah.
No, it's a high that's higher than the others. I know you're always happy when the team win games.
Yeah.
But there are some games. I remember years ago, United beat Deportivo La Coruña away. And I'm just there thinking, whoa, what? Because they were a top team.
Of all United's history, you've picked out a win over Deportivo.
No, I'm saying
Super Deportivo.
I'm saying that once a year, normally, and with more predictability on when we were better, I just get this massive high from a United game. So Paris, obviously, under Oli was one of them. Beating City last January was one of them. Where you can't help how you feel about it, but they need certain ingredients, and they had them yesterday. I just feel completely shattered and yet elated, and it was just wonderful. It was absolutely magnificent, and everything's played into the weekend. Tottenham got beat. Villa didn't win. Coventry's in the semi-final. All the little bits of gold that have sprinkled on the top gives me this euphoric feeling that no drug can match. apart from the drug of Man United.
Oh, that's cheesy. Maybe it's just the fact that Ahmad scored in stoppage time at the end of extra time to cap the second comeback for Manchester United in just that 120 minutes or 130, whatever it ended up being, once everything was added on. It just had everything, Carl, didn't it? The game, the situation. I mean, I said at the top, it's potentially the greatest FA Cup tie in Manchester United's history. I mean, it's the way it's being talked about today, and there's going to be a lot of recency bias and all that high that Andy's just spoken about will add into it, but I had to top that, innit?
It's the best of the 21st century, I'll say. I really wish I was there. Boys, you got to tell me what that sounded like. To me, watching that, I'll tell you where I watched it a bit later. It through the screen, it looked as if that's the loudest or happiest United fans have been since the League Cup final. My mate Richie was there. He says that's the best Old Trafford's been since Ronaldo came back. I had a couple of mates tell me it's the best since United beat Barcelona in the Europa League. In terms of just sheer, I want to hug everyone around me. What compares?
Andy said it's a once in a year high. For me, it was a once in a decade high. It was more than that because I went with my dad, as you'll have seen from Instagram, and we don't get to that many games nowadays. You know, I work around Manchester United, so that's what my football viewing is usually based around. But he was the guy, obviously, that took me to games as a kid. And in fact, as we were walking in at the car park, I was saying to him, do you remember this is where you gave me my first ever driving lesson 20 years ago? It was about 20 years ago this kind of week, you know, because I turned 17.
Aww.
And he was like, oh yeah. So a lot of these kind of memories that I've got are built around Manchester United, even the ones that aren't around football. So he's getting on a bit now. And I was like, we need to get to this game if we can. And yeah, it kind of got in early, got, you know, saw Andy in the Munich tunnel beforehand, which was a lovely little impromptu meeting. And then you start, you know, going into the ground and the noise starts building. And I'd forgotten, I don't know if you can hear my voice, it's a little bit croaky. You kind of use different vocal cords to sing than you do for, like, you know, just general conversation or just kind of singing along to a pop tune in your car, which obviously we all do. it took me a little bit of time to get the right kind of gravelly tones for the songs. And we had amazing seats, you know, right in the South Stand, as you say, right by where, I mean, six of the seven goals were scored at that end. So I had an incredible view, and you could just tell when Ahmad was running through that this was going to be the goal. I kind of always sensed that United were going to win the game. I just felt like they were, you know, Erik ten Hag was gambling with his formation. Players were still running, committed. I mean, some of the energy that they expelled on that pitch is outstanding.
Incredible.
But the atmosphere around us was just great. You were right by the Red Army section. Credit to them. I think United have done brilliantly to get those rail seatings in there, to get that group of core fans just singing the whole way through. Yeah, there were bits in the second half where Liverpool outswung United because it felt like maybe this is slipping away, but the consistent noise all the way through was there. I actually got told off a little bit at one point because I sang UNITED, United are the team for me, and it finishes with an expletive. But it was, you know, what other people in the section were sort of singing, but an older gentleman in front of me sort of turned around and said, "Oi, cut it out, bad language." And I was like, oh, right, okay. And like, I bristled a bit and I said, I went back to him and said, you know, wind your neck and kind of thing.
So, man, I said, kind of fuck felt, off.
Well, that's what I should have said, but I suddenly thought, wait a second, the professional head turned on. And I was like, if I get chucked out here for like having a pop at some old guy that wants to stop swearing, I can't live this down. Fortunately, the people around me were just like, what's he on about? And then they started, you know, swearing for me almost. But the thing was, right, he then got up as Anthony is the movie. Is building so that Anthony equalises, and he's going to his car 85th minute, and he literally, the goal is going in as he stood up and walking out, and I'm like, what is going on here? And so he missed all of extra time.
He's gone.
He missed the 4-3. But the funniest thing was that as soon as Anthony scored, the song around Old Trafford was UNITED, you know, 76,000 fans singing it, so maybe that's why he left.
It was great seeing Laurie and his dad in the tunnel. And I was actually speaking to Howard Wheatcroft, and I just said, one second, Howard.
Oh, he didn't.
And spoke to Laurie and his dad. And his dad gave me permission to go a bit harder on him. He said he approved of all the chips, jibes and all that. And then as we're talking, Martin Edwards, who's the club president, came through. I've not seen him for a couple of years, and he said hello. I looked up at the stand at one point and saw Laurie and his dad just going, United, United. I'm thinking, this is what it's about, innit? Mm. There's a really good vibe about Old Trafford yesterday, and You had all the away fans, so that all added into it as well. But it was actually the first time that the main stand has sung since 1984 against Barcelona at home. And there were people literally getting up and going, what's he doing there? He's going, he's singing. Sometimes at a football match you do it. So what do you sing? We'll start off with United. And he's like, well, I've had my season to give 120 years. Well, I've never sung in my bloody life. This is a disgrace. It was just, it had everything.
It certainly did. I think that's an interesting point that you've mentioned about the main stand. I mean, I was at the Liverpool City game in the Premier League, and the atmosphere, not wanting to sort of praise Liverpool too much on this podcast, considering what the topic's going to be, but the atmosphere at the start of that game was absolutely incredible, to the point where you could see Pep Guardiola was just literally a few metres away, just taking it in and being in awe of the atmosphere. And I remember sitting there looking at him thinking, I really wish that Manchester City's manager thought that about United's atmosphere when it's the Manchester derby. And I guess, I mean, Jurgen Klopp said a lot of things yesterday and did a lot of things, but I really hope that it sort of had an impact on Liverpool, the atmosphere, because it doesn't feel always like we can harness the power of 76,000 fans, because there is so many different types of fan who go to Old Trafford. There's so many different types of people who go. But Carl, when you can produce that, it shows that there's a power to it, because United were on the ropes a little bit in the second half of normal time, and Liverpool did have the chances, but the team's performance were energised by the atmosphere, the running that they produced, the togetherness, the commitment. It wasn't perfect by any stretch, but they showed some really important qualities that United fans love.
Absolutely. And it's a loop. You know, United fans get behind their team when they play in the United way, air quotes, which is winning, young players, being really, really brave and confident. And I think the player right now who epitomises it perhaps better than anyone else is Garnacho. Just, he's a bit of an oink. He's not the strongest. He's not the quickest, but he just keeps going. And I know Andy said there was a point where he thought the team was going to lose. I'm looking through the game, through Andy's feed and everything else. And Andy tweeted when Mainoo went off, there's a particular tone of voice Andy tweets in.
Yeah.
And when he
I know what you mean.
When Mainoo went off, he tweeted, and it reads like Andy's gone, yep, that's it, we're done. We're done.
You're correct. That's how I felt.
And I think quite a few people thought when Mainoo went off, this is it, this is over. So you have Garnacho on multiple occasions this season, which is almost, sometimes it feels like he's dragging that attack, kicking and screaming 5 yards forward. And then you get the crowd gets behind him. When Garnacho gets on the ball now, we've got into, go on, mate.
Yeah.
Do something, because he will do something now. I think Hoyland has a bit of that, go on, to him. Mainoo is getting to that status now when the ball gets to him, we all sort of lean forward in our seat. So you build around that, you get some good bits. And then I think, this feels bizarre to say, I think the fact that Antony scored the goal to get it to extra time helped, because it was so ludicrous and bizarre. Right,
it's like if he scores, then United really can win.
There you go, right? If he scores on his right foot, then maybe I should. Yeah. Maybe I should.
It's a great finish as well.
Maybe I should sit down. Maybe I shouldn't put the kettle on and whatnot. So I watched. I was in the Netherlands this week, so I watched the first half with the in-laws, and then I had to travel back to Amsterdam. So I had to watch the second half and extra time, doing an Andy. Watching it in the back of a car on my phone, just sort of looking up once every now and again while someone's talking to me, like, yeah, what? So when Antony scored, I just sort of went, what? Oh? You know, my in-laws are Ajax fans. So, you know, father-in-law's like, oh.
Hey, you like this.
He's like, he scored, with the right foot. And he's like, he never does that. I'm like, he never does that. And I think that was the point when I was allowed to put my headphones in and really just disappear for the remaining half hour, because That's one of the silliest half an hour of football I've ever seen in my life.
The thing was, it was a day of redemption for quite a few players. You know, Antony scoring, the criticism that Rashford's had, the miss at the end of normal time, which I think was probably offside, but obviously we didn't know that at the time, and he certainly didn't. Even Ahmad getting the winner, you know, the ups and downs that he's had, but Harry Maguire was roared onto the pitch, which hasn't always been the case. Scott McTominay scoring again. Onana looked comfortable and was really important with his hands and his feet at times during the game. Yeah, it just felt like everything came together, Laurie, in a way, didn't it? All was forgiven, you know, for 130 minutes, whatever it was.
Well, that's it. As bleak as this season has been at times, that felt like an incredible, you know, peak of a arc for so many players. You know, you've not even mentioned Diogo Dalot, who I thought was outstanding in terms of both his defensive diligence. I mean, the interception late on when it was that 5-on-2.
Was he the only defender left at the end as well, I think?
Well, Harry, this was,
midfield.
It was, that's it. He was the central midfielder getting the ball off Onana in the first half, wasn't he? And
yeah. And
obviously it was a bit of a high wire at times, but then it worked and you're like, okay, that's what Ten Hag's trying to do. If he's got the players to do it, I do think that that's the kind of football, and it produced an attack for United. But yeah, as the game wore on, and this is what I loved about being in the fans, and yeah, my professionalism just went out the window. It was pure, you know, enjoyment and kind of giving myself to the game. There was some swear words, I'm sorry. But we were kind of trying to piece it together amongst ourselves as to what was happening, you know, particularly in that extra time. So you could see Anthony having a bit of a strop at half-time of extra time because he was being asked to play at left-back. And you could see that Bruno Fernandes was the central defender at large points when he couldn't really move all that much. Harry Maguire was the only, you know, outright defender, basically, really, for much of extra time. And he was getting forwards. He was the one, like, you know, because basically the idea, I suppose, was to, you know, high balls, he would win it, you know, in the air, and then second balls and you know, try and get something on a knockdown. And it kind of worked. It caused a bit of chaos. He was actually up the pitch when, I think, Ahmad nicked it off, was it Nunes, for the McTominay to slip Rashford through. So it was that kind of chaos that just produced this kind of, I don't know, wild atmosphere in the stands where people are on seats and they're kind of clambering over each other and they're kind of craning their necks to see what's going on. And I think you have to say, you know, big credit to Erik ten Hag, because he could have replaced like for like at different points. But every time he made a substitution, he was taking a defender off and putting an attacker on. It was like he was in the casino.
He
wasn't rolling the dice. He was at the pontoon table. He's on 18. He's going twist. He's on 19. He's going twist because he knows that he's got to get 21 to beat the house. And that's basically what he felt like he had to do with Liverpool, you know, just pile on these attackers. And it did. It harks back to Sir Alex Ferguson. I think I don't know what the exact quote is, but he basically says,
football,
you know, when it gets well, there was that, obviously. But, you know, as the match wears on, he basically just says, get some attackers on the pitch and you never know what's going to happen in football. And yeah, by the end, it was, what the hell was that formation?
He was dressed a bit like a croupier, actually, Ten Hag. He went all sort of suit and
nice
bells and whistles,
tie, didn't
he, for his big day?
I saw him after the game and I said, if you go into Manchester tonight, you will not have to buy a drink. And I'm clearly joking. He said, well, I have alternative arrangements. Maybe it's not going to be possible. I'm just saying it. If you do, the beer...
Do you think they're inviting him out on the lash?
Anything. He calls me, hey, Andy. You know? Another thing about the main stand, there was a lad in front of me went absolutely crazy 4 times. Proper, get in, get in, get in. Or when Manchester United were doing something he didn't approve of, I was going, no, you know not to do that. Do you know what his name was? Darren Fletcher.
I knew it was going to be Darren Fletcher.
So I'm going to report him to the authorities because he was blocking my view. That's what I'm going to report him for. Wonderful. And being serious, why it was wonderful, he's put so much time in with them young players. You know, he's the conduit between young players, emerging players, and first team proper. And so many examples. If you read the Garnacho piece I did a couple of weeks ago, or Laurie's piece on Kobbie Mainoo, Fletcher's all over him. And he's not someone who pushes himself forward. He doesn't do media. And he went for it in the celebrations. And if you can't celebrate once in a while, because normally he keeps his head down, bit of a nerd with all his earpieces and all that, but he went for it.
Was he in the 4-3 against City? Because that was the one that kind of came to my mind as a potential equivalent.
He
scored two, didn't he? Yeah. Great memory. So, like, he knows what it's like to win that game. So that is, it is important that you've got people like that on the, you know, coaching staff that can then talk to the players about. But I think that's probably the biggest thing. And Carl's sort of touched on this point with Garnacho. But so many of those players seem to really embrace the pressure and the challenge. And we've said that they've crumbled at times at different moments. But I do feel like this kind of occasion can really build up that kind of confidence to try things in desperate moments, or, you know, just to really influence a game like that. If you can do it in a situation like that, then you can do it anywhere.
Well, there was a bit, you know, the start of the game, because United started fantastically well. And I think even watching the game back, the commentators were talking about it on ITV, Sam Matterface and Lee Dixon. Like, why can't they do this all the time? Do you know what I mean? There's just a bit of... And they couldn't even do it all the game, actually, because it did sort of dissipate after that opening sort of 20, 25 minutes. But, Carl, that opening 20, 25 minutes was so good. The intensity, winning the ball back, you know, the movement, the fluidity of the attack. More of that, please.
Yeah, Ten Hag said the first half an hour was the best he's seen Manchester United. And I agree. I think that first half plan was really good. This feels weird to say. Mainu being the deepest midfielder rather than Casemiro helped, because Mainu's not trying to play it 300 miles an hour. I also think Liverpool being a transition-like team as well played into Manchester United's hands a bit. But that game plan works. United can't do that for 90 minutes because it requires just a ridiculous amount of running. And I think Ten Hag's tried to get everyone fit enough to do that much running, and that might be why everyone is injured right now. So that's the balancing act. One thing that was better from United against Liverpool was just they retreated a lot into far more compact shape, which feels ludicrous because I've seen loads of screenshots about massive gaps in midfield that Liverpool running through. But they sort of, when they did lose the ball, they did sort of hunker down in this 4-4-2. I don't know why I'm talking about tactics and strategy in that game. That game was absolutely bonkers. I've watched it twice now and I'm just like, what? Anthony's playing left back and he looks quite good at left back. Should he play left back next week? I don't know.
Yeah, you're talking about tactics and so on. The formation United finished with was 4-2-4, I think. I saw a banter account tweet it out. Dalot, Fernandez, Eriksen, Anthony as a back four. McTominay and Mount in holding midfield with Diallo, Rashford, Maguire and Garnacho in attack. So
I said to the lad next to me, it was like 1-4-5, could it have been? Does that add up to the right numbers?
Absolutely bizarre. The game plan for the first half an hour is good. I don't know if it can last more than half an hour because it requires loads of running. I think even when Casemiro comes back, there might be merit in swapping him and Mainu in that midfield partnership. So Mainu picks it up from Maguire, Rafa, whoever. And then, I mean, that front three, Hoyland, Rashford, Garnacho, we all know that's probably United's best front three. So have at it.
The tactical points are interesting. I spoke to Andy Robertson after the game. He's a really eloquent speaker. You can see he's extremely passionate and done a couple of things over the years where I've got a very high opinion of him. And he talked about their game management. He put it on themselves. He said United took their chances. And he didn't say United, actually. He just, they took their chances. And he blamed their own game management. Diogo Dalot was talking about what you just said there, Carl, changing the way that their positioning on the pitch so that the lines were closer. But it was still wild, wasn't it? It was just wild. The number of times I saw Kobbie Mainoo just nick the ball away and turn a Liverpool attack into a Manchester United attack.
Yeah.
That guy amazes me. He's so, so good. And I feel excited about elements of Manchester United's team now in a way that I haven't done all season. And I first saw Wolves in February when you think, okay, so this is what Erik ten Hag's trying to do. But it's because of the youngsters and assimilating with some of the older players, nowhere near there. But Liverpool are one of the best teams in the world. They're at the top of the strongest league in the world. They were going for a potential quadruple. They're not now. The fans can save some money. They don't have to go to Wembley next month. I'm sure they would be very appreciative of Manchester United for helping them out there. It's just so... Liverpool, a week before, I probably deserve to win against Manchester City. And that's a Liverpool team without four out of the five defenders. They're top, top quality. And they've got their own very, very good young players as well, and spoke to lots of fans about them. That's a huge, huge result. We can't talk too much about what may happen next because Coventry City might beat United in the semi-final. But if it ends up being a United City game at Wembley again, just got to lay a punch on them this time.
Andy.
What?
Okay, so we've been going back and forth about, you know, the mitten standard of quality, getting in top four, getting a trophy. And
top five and a trophy.
Top five and a trophy, I should say now. Recent weeks, you kept saying Champions League is still on. And I've been like, eh,
yeah,
probably not.
It is still on.
It's definitely still on.
Yeah.
Look.
And now
look at the way Villa
draws,
played against Spurs. Look the way draws, Spurs played at Fulham.
The draws swap now. Yeah. So I'm here asking for some extra optimism off you. Is it on?
Yeah. And there's another factor that a football nerd told me last night. West Ham beating Freiburg helps the coefficient.
Yeah.
I was watching all that last week. So David Moyes has done two pretty decent favours for Manchester United in the last 7 days.
Yeah.
So he might still get that statue outside Old Trafford.
Maybe.
I'll try and get a response out of him for the next podcast. Probably tell me where to go. I think it is on. I think it's still difficult. Villa have got the hardest running. United have got, a Sheffield United at home. Brentford, who United are playing, can't get a win at the moment. They got beat by Burnley at the weekend. But there's still some... Liverpool at home is the next match, isn't it? They're going to be so vengeful.
Yeah, that's going to be a huge test. That,
yeah, it? You almost don't expect to win there, but I didn't expect one yesterday either. There's got to be a proper run. But yeah, I do think it's still on. And back to the what should we aim for this season, I think if they qualify for the Champions League and win the FA Cup, that's a pass mark. And for 90% of this season, we ain't been looking like we're getting anywhere near a pass mark.
At least we know the right formation now, Laurie, to beat Liverpool, and it involves having Bruno and Eriksen at centre-back, Antony on the left, Maguire up front. So we'll just play that again, I guess.
I mean, it's absolutely bewildering, really, isn't it? But Ten Hag's done this before, hasn't he, where he's kind of had players in weird positions towards the end of games trying to win it. So that's why I'd always sort of want to give him faith, because we can maybe get onto it in terms of what this means for Ten Hag as a manager United. But
we will in a bit.
That's what I kind of like about him as a manager. I feel like that is a quality of a Manchester United manager rather than just replacing like for like. And I know he's not always got his substitutions correct, but in these kind of pivotal games where it's all on the line, go for it. But I thought, just touching on the point about Kobbie Mainoo, I think it was a real... I know he's had a breakthrough season, but I thought this was a real statement performance from him, because you're up against a midfield there in Liverpool that is, probably their best midfield. I mean, Endo, you wouldn't have said so maybe at the start of the season, but he's had such a good season.
Yeah, yes.
Him, Szoboszlai and McAllister, that's a proper midfield right there. And he held his own. And yeah, there were times when Liverpool ran through when there was gaps in the second half. And there was a couple of conversations that you could see between Mainoo and McTominay, when I think Mainoo was advancing in the first half and he thought that McTominay had dropped and then he hadn't. And then Liverpool were able to sort of run through them. And that was actually another point that I saw with Ten Hag. I think it was after a free kick maybe, and he was imploring his defenders to stay high and they dropped, and he kind of slapped his hands together in frustration. Szoboszlai then had a lot of space in midfield to run through. So that's part of the, I think, recurring theme over the course of the season that Ten Hag's trying to get his hands on. But I just think that Mainoo unlocks so much potential for United, and I don't want to put too much pressure on him because he's only 18, but that ability to wriggle out of tight spaces, take it off a defender, have the composure and calmness that he does. And then also, I mean, his quick feet in the final third were incredible.
Was brilliant, wasn't it, for McTominay's
How many did he do, though? Like, I mean, it seemed like he did it on repeat. And that's obviously the product, I suppose, of being an attacker, a winger, as an academy player coming through. So you've got those two sides, but he just does unlock quite a lot. And I do actually think McTominay had a really good game in central midfield. Not only, his goal, and also, he had a really close chance, didn't he, in extra time. His pass for Rashford was really well weighted in the right channel, so that Rashford could actually just come onto it and strike it. But there were a couple of moments where he actually battled with McAllister, for example, came away with the ball, and then United had an opportunity to attack. And it was so important, I think, in those moments where Liverpool felt like they had the ascendancy, for United to win it in those moments and then push them back a little bit and create that kind of even feel to it.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
We've not spoken about the match winner yet properly, have we, Ahmad? Incredible composure to be able to do that at the end of the game in stoppage time, at the end of extra time. That just that body movement to wrong foot Conor Bradley and then sweep it, obviously, with his left foot into the far corner. I mean, Andy, was that the best red card or the most I don't care red card since Ole Gunnar Solskjaer tripped up a Newcastle attacker?
Rob Lee.
Was it Rob Lee, was it?
It was Rob Lee.
By the way, as if Ole Gunnar Solskjaer couldn't catch Rob Lee. I don't think Rob Lee was particularly quick, was he?
So he did it and he thought that the manager would be happy with him because he's obviously done it for the team. The manager called him in his office the next morning, fined him 2 weeks' wages and said, Ollie, you should have known that Rob Lee's scoring record is not good and that Raymond van der Hel, the goalkeeper, was well positioned. He's like, do you think I'm thinking about Rob Lee's scoring record when he's running in on goal, about to score and cost us the league title? And Sir Alex said, you can't be doing that, son, fining you 2 weeks' wages. Winked at him and he feels it like he actually approved, but he could never say it.
Yeah.
So in answer to your question, Ian, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't even realise what was happening. You know, it just—I didn't know he took his shirt off. I didn't, you know, just unbelievable.
What noise did you make when it went in?
I don't know.
Guttural.
I could sense. You could sense he was going to score, and we had a perfect position from behind his left foot, where you could see it's rolling. So like we knew that Rashford's a miss was going wide. We were like, I think that's going in. I know it hit the post. He's had to properly throw his body over, hasn't he, to get the right angle on it. And it's actually not a bad pass
from Garnacho, wasn't it?
But it was.
A little bit.
He delayed it well, didn't he? But then it wasn't quite in front of him enough. But no. Yeah, maybe he knows that Ahmad, you know, can do this kind of thing. But I mean, I sort of think with Garnacho, how many sprints is that in that game? And it's the 120th minute. Just to even have the energy to do that and then get a ball away, he's faultless in my opinion. I hadn't realised he'd been booked to begin with.
He forgot, apparently.
He forgot. Well, do you know who didn't forget? Scott McTominay. Because I've seen in the replay, and actually he's like hiding Ahmad, and he's like, get your shirt back on. And he's trying to like crowd the ref so he doesn't see it, even though Ahmad's like held it up in front of everybody. I mean, he's not getting away with it. But I think McTominay in that moment realised that he was going to get sent off and tried to escape it. But what I did quite enjoy was as Ahmad's going down the tunnel. And obviously that's the one shame, isn't it? He's not allowed on the pitch at the end when the full-time whistle goes. He's not allowed to go back to the goal.
Can you imagine him in the dressing room though, like jumping up and down on his own, screaming at the TV?
Well, yeah. I hope that when all the players came back in, submerged him and just you know, gave him the real celebration that he deserved. But you could see a couple of United officials just like massive smiles on their faces, giving him back slaps as he's going down the tunnel. And you're thinking, yeah, okay, that's one of those red cards that ideally you don't want to take, but there's like 10 seconds left of the game maybe. Although actually, there's probably more than that, wasn't there? Because there's a couple of moments where Garnacho
had another sprint, I think,
and
after that. Yeah, he still had
a couple
left.
And Bruno had to protect it on the far side. So, yeah, maybe it was a little bit of jeopardy, but I think the circumstance, it was a bit like, you know, Roy Keane getting sent off in the replay at Villa Park in 99. Kind of, it adds to the drama of the occasion almost. It's one of those memorable moments that you'll, you know, sort of not cherish, I suppose, but it forms part of this tapestry of this incredible match that you just go, you smile and you shrug your shoulders at.
Yeah, the good thing is as well, I was thinking that the bookings and the two bookings would be specific to the FA Cup, because if you collect bookings in the FA Cup, you're banned in the FA Cup. But for some reason, if you get a red card, it applies to the next league game.
That is weird.
So he'll miss Brentford, but he'll be all right to feature in the semi against Coventry at Wembley next month. So it's a bit of a weird ruling that. But anyway, I'm quite pleased for him because it feels like he deserves to be part of the party, at least for the semi-final.
It's a really interesting one because it means now there's no pressure to play. Well, you can't play next week. There's absolutely no pressure to feature him. And so Ten Hag can continue whatever acclimatisation plan he's had for Ahmad for a while. Because there have been questions, why isn't he playing Ahmad? Why isn't he giving Ahmad more minutes? And to my outside opinion, there's something in there still that he's not quite offering. It might be off the ball, who knows. You score a last minute win against Liverpool, everyone's everyone's going to start screaming, start in the next game, start in the next game. You can't. So Ten Hag sort of has a, you know, in his back pocket, all right, I'll keep doing my plan. And then hopefully, you know, you tell Ahmad, thanks for that. You can play in the semi-final and let's build up your plan so you can have some more game time between now and the semi-final rather than just throwing him in with 30 minutes left against Brentford.
He was really good off the ball though, wasn't he?
Yeah,
like,
was.
I mean, he was the one that harried Nunez into that mistake. And also, what was, I can't remember the player, but he sprinted back out of nowhere. Was it Gakpo that he tackled?
You when got Liverpool, Gakpo. You got Gakpo.
It was an incredible tackle, like clean as anything. And then he brings it away down the wing and kind of keeps it and then recycles it. So he looked quite... This is the thing that I've always thought, I mean, Carl, we've discussed this, haven't we, where I think you've been really sort of supportive of him, and I've always been, he's clearly got incredible technique and ability to score, but does he have that kind of grit and, I guess, I don't know, physicality that you perhaps need at the English Premier League? But I don't know, I felt like he showed it a bit there in that cameo. Maybe that's the issue, that he can't do it regularly, but I don't know, it felt like a pretty complete performance from him.
I'm really high on him. I think his inventiveness in the final third is out there. So we've seen that in the goal against Liverpool. You know, his first goal for United was a sort of back header.
Yeah.
Spinning around against AC Milan that sort of got forgotten because the game ended on the draw. So I think final third ball comes to him. He can do things that most defenders in the Premier League cannot legislate against. I do worry about, I mean, he's pretty small and he's bulked up a bit since he's come back from loan from Sunderland. But there are times where he sort of makes a run. You can just see the defenders go, I'm just going to shoulder barge you and get the ball off you. So we'll see. I'd love for him to get more minutes. But also, at this point in time, best right-wing option, Garnacho. So,
yeah, he's definitely the best right-wing option. There's no question about that. There was a right-winger we were talking about who likes to play on the left wing, Jadon Sancho, on the last podcast. We'll get to some of your feedback on that because we actually asked a question about what you wanted to do in the future. But Ahmad sort of staking his claim a little bit there, Andy, with showing what he can do. And we've had to wait for it. He's had to wait for it. He's had the loan spell, you know, at Middlesbrough, also Rangers as well. But 3.5 years after joining, that's what a £37 million winger is supposed to do, isn't it?
Yeah, the price tag isn't on him.
No.
Another who moved during COVID and moved from the city which was hardest hit in Europe, Bergamo, at the time. I think Erik ten Hag feels that he should have played him more. And when Carl's saying then, is this some sort of grand plan for Erik? He maybe has got it wrong, because at Sunderland last season, he did really, really well. That doesn't mean that you're going to do really, really well for a Premier League team as well. Great to see. To be so composed to finish with that amount of pressure, because Marcus Rashford had a very good chance at the end of normal time. And you could see he was devastated when he missed it and he had a good game. It was the loudest I'd heard the Stretford end sing for Marcus for a long, long time. But yeah, bring it on. More options. You know, we don't know how their careers are going to pan out, but if Ahmad comes... You know, at the start of the season, we were talking about Palestri in this position, and he got like a 3 or 4 game run. He was 6 out of 10 in those games. We all wanted him to do well, but he was 6 out of 10. Now, the same applies for Ahmad. Will he get those 3 or 4 games? And will he be able to knock in an 8 out of 10 where you're going, okay, you deserve a few more games? I really want to watch the match again, and I never, ever say that, because I'm always about looking forward. But when Carl said he'd watched it twice, I missed so much because Darren Fletcher was blocking my view, which was out of order. And I was working. Where'd you get it? Where can you watch it again?
Andy, I've done this morning. Well, I did it last night and then finished it this morning. But ITVX, it's on there. Go on there. There's also Match of the Day highlights on BBC if you want a bit of analysis as well.
Is it on MUTV?
I think it will be as well, yeah.
Well, I'm not watching there because Ben Fornan was commentating it, and he too was very unprofessionally jumping up and down in celebration. I want my commentary. Ben's a great lad. Absolutely love him
He's the best.
He was going crazy. So I'm going to send footage of him to his bosses, and you know, he might get a small sanction from work for a few months.
The one thing about Ahmad is that he has actually been injured a bit, hasn't he, this season? Obviously, he got injured in pre-season and then again after the Forest game, or there was an illness, I think, as well involved. So I think Ten Hag probably would have liked to test him a bit more in this season. But certainly you've had managers, you know, Solskjaer, Ranić and Ten Hag that have all sort of seen the quality but not given him, you know, that thrust into the first team. So there's obviously something that he's wanted to work on. But Ten Hag was like this with Garnacho at the start, wasn't he? Yeah. And now look, so, and he had his arm around him after the game yesterday. So I sort of wonder if it's probably not for everybody, Ten Hag style of management, you know, as again we'll get on to, but I don't know, I think some of that tough love does work.
Yeah.
You know, when Tony Murray was at Sunderland with Ahmad, he spoke very eloquently about him, and he even spoke to Sunderland fans about why he dropped him from the starting lineup two or three times. And he sort of, he gave words to the effect of, he's a young player and he can't. It's hard for young players to give you an 8 out of 10 week in, week out. And sometimes their energy levels dip. So rather than, you know, throw him in for another 90 minutes where they're a bit too tired to give an 8 out of 10, I'll take him out on a midweek game and save him for a weekend. And I think that might be the adjustment. Again, I mean, there is a version of United's attack where it is with a fluid front three of Rasmus and Garnacho and another. And Ahmad can be one of those players. You know, like Rashford can be one of those players. Antony can be one of those players if he keeps using his right foot. This is nice. I feel positive and optimistic. I was absolutely dancing through airport security last night.
It's remarkable that Ahmad's even here at all, to be honest, considering his backstory. There was a remarkable piece that Si Hughes did for The Athletic about the man who was accused of trafficking Ahmad to Europe when he was younger, and the Italian court case around it as well. I'd recommend, you know, anyone to go and read that if you want to find out more about him. But yeah, I think it was a brilliant moment for him. And after waiting so long to have a moment like that, despite that backheader against AC Milan on his debut, was it that goal? I mean, that was his first goal, wasn't it? This was his second. Yeah, very, very pleased for him. Right, let's talk about Erik ten Hag then. Laurie, you teased it earlier. But Andy, I mean, in terms of a result, how big a result was that for the Manchester United manager?
Big in capital letters, because it keeps his job alive. It keeps the season alive. Huge, absolutely huge. And I watched him pretty closely yesterday. He was right at it on the touchline, and obviously looked really smart as well, because he managed to get that Adolfo Domingo's jacket off him. He's like stuck to him. He must have a sponsorship deal with him, because it's the only thing he ever wears. But he looked really smart with his suit on, and he got the win. It's a huge win for him. If that means United win the FA Cup, I mean, it didn't save Van Gaal's job, did it, in 2016?
No.
I sense it's slightly different this time. He needs other huge wins as well. He talks about every game being a cup final. It's not just for his team, it's for him. And I think his approval rating's about 50-50 at the moment. I can also argue to myself whether we keep him or not. And I've heard him described as Erik ten Bob, which was a bit disrespectful by some fans, but it's a reflection of the feeling from some. Even now, the team have not scored anywhere near as many goals. So to score four goals in a game, not just about the whim, to do it against Liverpool, big, big, big. I don't think the decision's been made on him. People have said to me, he's dead man walking. Like, how do you know that? I just don't buy it, but I might be totally wrong there, so... All those positives, more players coming back, and we're going to get even more coming back as well. It was lovely. I don't think Hoyland had a particularly good game yesterday, but we'll excuse him because he'd just come back. You know, Harry Maguire only played in two training sessions before yesterday. Aaron Wan-Bissaka, why did he play right and left back, by the way? I couldn't work that out.
So the idea was to get him touch tight on Mohamed Salah. Salah for...
He was great against Salah for most of the
game. Yeah, he was. Yeah.
Salah for all of his qualities, you know, if you can... Back to goal in the wide areas. If you can stop him from turning, that can work. Asterisk, okay. Uplift, question mark. And I think, yeah, Wan-Bissaka was just told, clamp him down. It's that thing of, that works really well against the winger that wants to run at you. We know Wan-Bissaka can do that. We've seen what he did against Raheem Sterling in more than one Manchester derby.
Yep.
And then Pep Guardiola started playing Phil Foden up there and things switched. But it's that thing of more options, things are getting better.
Mm.
I think the idea now, or the argument for keeping Ten Hag, is if you can get the right people in and around him and above him, you know, you can get more results like Liverpool.
Well, I think as well that there's a thought that you want to see how Ten Hag performs under a different structure.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there is a restructuring going on of everything above Ten Hag at the moment. There will be different people in position in due course, and there is an argument to say, Laurie, that you need to see Ten Hag in that sort of system where he's not having to make a lot of crucial decisions, where things are being, you know, dictated to him maybe a little bit more, and he's just focused on coaching and prepping the team. Is that fair? Is that a consideration?
I would say that's a valid argument. I mean, how much he would want to cede kind of authority is interesting. That'll be a conversation.
Aspect, yeah.
But I mean, I think if it meant, you know, just a recalibration of his responsibilities, you know, and he remained as Man United manager, I don't see how that would be an issue, you know. And if he's then, you know, supplied with more options in terms of recruitment, and there's more sort of sharpness and sort of direct sort of negotiations that then produce a better squad for him, then that's only a good thing from his perspective, surely. I think if, you know, say he wins the FA Cup and manages to get into the Champions League, can you really sack a manager that's won a trophy and qualified for the Champions League back-to-back seasons? I mean, again, there's been some really low moments this season, even last season, you know, when you think back to the 7-0 against Liverpool. But I just think as a sort of black and white record, that's a pretty good record in the situation that he's in. Yeah, again, you could point fingers at the amount of money that has been spent on transfers. But again, he's not the one sort of putting the zeros on the checkbook. And I think yesterday just showed us what his kind of tactical flexibility could produce for United. And there were some encouraging signs there. We've sort of been asked all season, haven't we, what's the style of play? And I think Ten Hag has got pragmatic at moments because of the players available to him. And actually, if what he really wants to have is a high energy, high transition team, high press, high defensive line, you know, that's what I think a lot of United fans would love to see. So I think it was a big moment for that. And I do find, you know, you could win games 5-0 and you wouldn't remember them as well as you remember this 4-3 game. And that's the kind of thing that football is all about for me, you know, creating these kind of memories and having an atmosphere like that at Old Trafford, where Erik ten Hag has been such a pivotal figure in it, is difficult to then dislodge. I mean, he had I don't know if you could see this, Andy, from your seats, but he had a huddle a couple of times, didn't he? I think at the end of full time and then maybe at half time of extra time. I think he was leading the conversation in that. I don't know if other players were as well. But just, and for whatever, even if players kind of, you know, get the hump about not playing or being put in different positions or his style of management, maybe that friction works in certain situations like this. And maybe over time that can actually produce, you know, a consistent level of performance.
This felt more like the Ten Hag of January 2023.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the concerning things about this season was Ten Hag stopped doing two or three things that made him good last season. So last season, he was good at in-game adjustments. Yeah, against Barcelona, against Manchester City at home, there were two or three times where he would see which way the momentum was going and go, no, this player comes on now and make an adjustment. He was good at putting in a check and balance in to make sure, okay, the team has to learn a certain style of football, but until then, we don't lose horribly because we've got an extra midfielder here. All right, you know, De Gea is not the most accurate kicker, or we haven't got a great long ball option, but so we're going to put Wout Weghorst a bit deeper as number 10. Whereas this season, he stopped doing some of those things, and it was really, really odd. And I couldn't tell you if it was because he was unable to recognise the problems with his setup or just unwilling to change. Whereas that game against Liverpool, that was the return of the good Ten Hag substitutions, right? That's the, in terms of being vindicated for a decision, having your heavily criticised, very, very expensive winger from the Dutch league score a goal to send you into extra time. Yeah, okay, that'll do. Or the question, why haven't you given this academy promoted product more minutes? Ah, well, I'll save him to score a goal in the 120th minute. And I've described Ten Hag as being interim manager before in this podcast. And I think the argument to keep him and the argument Ten Hag, you know, I'm not sure if he's having an argument right now, but the whole thing Ten Hag should be, the counter argument will be now, give me the right structure to work in and just let me focus on this X's and O's tracksuit manager stuff and you can have more moments like Liverpool. Because I think the frustration from a lot of United fans is, you know, Ten Hag's not the most, sorry, it's going to be mean, he's not necessarily the most charismatic speaker or presence compared to other previous Manchester United managers. Yeah. But that was fine last season because you were winning games. And then they weren't winning games and he wasn't being very charismatic. And then the tactical elements he was supposed to bring weren't there anymore. And everyone, well, what's the point? So I think the argument now is, all right, if he wants to be the gruff-suited gentleman making really overambitious substitutions, let him. But you've also got to make sure those substitutions are well-selected and suit your style of play.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So Andy, then, we've said it's Coventry. Obviously Mark Robbins, former Manchester United striker Mark Robbins, is their manager. Is Ahmad then the new Mark Robbins? Finally, we have a new Mark Robbins, yeah?
Be wonderful. I'm delighted for Coventry. Their win at Wolves was the event of the weekend until it was superseded by what happened at Old Trafford. The fact that Coventry City have survived, they've been without a home so many times in the last decade.
Criminal, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. They've been in continual turmoil with their owners, who I don't think have always had the best interests of the club at heart. They thought that moving to a new stadium would mean that things would be better, that things actually got worse. And when I was growing up, Coventry were mainstays in the top division. Plenty of games, famous games between Manchester United and Coventry City for reasons right and wrong. David Boost was playing for Coventry City when he had that horrendous accident. Coventry actually went to Wembley last year. They just missed out on promotion to the Premier League. They played Luton Town. They took like 40-odd thousand. It's a big city. They're a big club. My Uncle John used to play for them, actually.
Of course he did.
He did.
Obviously,
and
a mitten link.
No, he played for them and at the same time was a first-class cricketer for Leicestershire as a wicketkeeper.
What?
Football and cricket at the highest level. I don't think Coventry were top flight.
Is Coventry even in Leicestershire?
No, he played for Leicester City as well. So he sort of moved, and then he moved down. David Pleat was asking about him.
See, I expected a Mark Robbins story. I expected Robbins. A story of Andy and Mark going out to the pub. I didn't expect this story.
You poked the bear.
All right, I'll give you the story.
He's just in his seat. He's leaning forward. Here he goes.
I am. Look how annoyed he got at that suggestion that he didn't have a Mark Robbins story up his sleeve.
I'm going to surprise you, lads. I reckon he's the only player from that team who I don't know.
Oh.
Never, ever interviewed him.
Ooh.
I don't think he's big on media, but I think he's a decent fella.
Sounds like a challenge, this.
Mm.
David May and him grew up together. I think the fathers were friends.
Lived on my estate.
Okay.
Mark Robbins' dad used to train Mark Robbins on our school pitch when the school was closed.
Right. But I don't know him.
Fairwood Park.
Never interviewed him.
Now's your chance, Andy. If you're going to interview him at any point, surely it's before a Wembley FA Cup semi-final.
I need a rest. I've been travelling too much. I'm just so delighted about the international break. But looking forward to hearing Coventry fans sing. They've got a beautiful song, the Eton Boat song. They sang it loud and proud when they knocked United out of the FA Cup at Old Trafford in 87 on the way to their most famous ever victory. We need revenge for that. We need to smash them 4-0 with a mad score in all four.
Well, that's for another day. Before we wrap this up then, let's talk about Jadon Sancho quickly if we can. Obviously, we ran a Spotify poll on the last podcast asking you the question, would you welcome Jadon Sancho back to Manchester United this summer? The answer was pretty resounding, to be honest. 72% of the just over 1,000 votes said that they wouldn't want Jadon Sancho back at United. We had lots of comments as well on the Athletic app, just to pick out a few. Ben S, would love to have him back smiling. Joby, Sancho's back home. Stay there then, please. Alan, Sancho should never play for Manchester United again. We also had emails as well. It was a brilliant reaction from you guys. So thank you very much for responding. We'll do more of these as the season goes on. So Alex says, I'll keep it short and sweet. I want Ten Hag to stay, so that should mean that Sancho only returns if there's a public resolution between the two. If Ten Hag leaves, I don't want Sancho back. I don't think a player should be able to just wait out a manager, because if it happens again, we'll look stupid. And then we had this one from Gav in Sydney. It's entitled, Hypothetically Speaking. So here we go. Greetings from Sydney. I wondered, when you were talking about Sancho at Dortmund, if a scenario exists where United finish fifth and Dortmund knock out an English club from the Champions League, killing our coefficient place for next season. I'm imagining Sancho scoring the winner in the final against City, leading to us losing our place in the Champions League next season. Would you take that over City winning it and us getting in the Champions League?
That's funny.
Anyone like to answer that?
I've had 3 hours sleep. I ain't answering that.
So, I will say, if Dortmund and Manchester City reach the Champions League final and it needs City to win, yeah, go on then, Jaden. Go win a Champions League for Dortmund. Go make
Dortmund
it
to win. I mean, yeah, okay.
And also Dortmund to win's a better story for the Champions League before it goes into whatever Swiss format nonsense that is.
Dortmund to win, and go on, Larry.
I feel like you just have to say, United should be qualifying for the Champions League on their own merit. You can't really hope to squeeze through the back door in fifth, really. So if that's your only hope, then you don't deserve to squeeze in. And so therefore, Dortmund to win. I got myself confused then, didn't I?
No, I watched PSV Dortmund on Dutch television, and Dutch television was a lot of eyebrows raised about Sancho, saying he played well in the game. However, someone commented that the comment was, even at his best, he plays in second gear, which I suppose is the problem.
Yeah.
I think that's also the second hidden problem to the Sancho United thing, is that even if he does come to a resolution with Erik ten Hag, public, private, however it is, I don't think he's in the starting lineup. It's definitely United's interest that he's playing well for Dortmund, but that's to get other suitors to be interested in Jadon Sancho rather than Jadon Sancho to be a player in the starting lineup next season.
Yeah. If you want to hear more about our thoughts on Jadon Sancho, we discussed it at length on the last podcast, but I just want to answer Gav's question. Dortmund to win the Champions League and Old Trafford to hear what next season, Carl? What's the sound?
Oh,
exactly. Laurie, you nodded at me.
Furiously, and just because I'll kick myself if I don't manage to get this in. I know I've said a lot about the atmosphere yesterday, but it was a really sweet moment after the final whistle. And it's one of those where fans are staying behind afterwards, sort of singing songs, waiting for every single player to leave the pitch. I mean, a load of them were shirtless, weren't they, because they'd given them to fans. And it was a nice moment just when a guy was speaking to my dad and then he sort of looked beyond him and went, Laurie. And it was a guy that had come to our live show in Belfast, and he said, I didn't come up to you afterwards. I'm not that kind of guy, but yeah, what a coincidence that you're here today. And so we had a nice conversation. Basically, so he's from Belfast, and his dad, he was in his dad's seat, and his dad's 76, and he wasn't there because he was playing the organ, at a ceremony for St. Patrick's Day.
Blimey.
So, you know, he had a good excuse not for being there, but he was in the section S122, which is the section that is, there's a lot of news about at the moment, because they're getting shifted to make room for hospitality tickets, which United are trying to consolidate them all in one area. And I can understand the reasons for United doing this at this moment. But what it does mean is that you've got people like Tommy's dad, who is 76, he sits on his own, he's around a load of people that he's been with for years and years and years, and he's got to know them and have, you know, enjoyable experiences with them. And so he's now sort of having to make this decision of, what do I do? Where do I go? So Tommy was just telling me this story about him, and I just thought, it was just something that you think about in the whole, when we're kind of talking about, you know, refurb or rebuild Old Trafford, and it's all comes down to business decisions, really. But there are human stories at the heart of it. And it did, you know, those kind of nights at Old Trafford make you think, do we really have to do a new stadium? Sorry, I'm going to leave it there at that point. But I just thought it was a really nice moment with Tommy after the game.
Yeah, I'll let you ponder that. I can see Andy chomping at the bit to come in and perform another U-turn like he's done on the stadium situation a few times. Anyway, we'll leave it there. Thank you as always for your company on Talk of the Devils. I hope you enjoyed listening back to our thoughts on the game on Sunday as much as we did giving them to you. We're not going to be recording again this week because it's the international break, so we'll speak to you again in the build-up to the Brentford match at the tail end of next week. But enjoy the moment. keep the bubble of fun going for just that little bit longer. It's great when that happens, isn't it? Like Andy said, it's a seasonal Manchester United high. Laurie said it was the best for a decade. I don't know, but whatever. Enjoy it, savour it, and we'll speak to you next week. Thank you again. Thank you, Laurie. Thank you, Andy. Thank you, Carl. Bye-bye.
The coolest man in Old Trafford was Ahmad. Manchester United ensure there will be no stop at Wembley on Jurgen Klopp's farewell tour. The hopes of an unlikely quadruple are over for Liverpool. Ended remarkably, dramatically, by Erik ten Hag's besieged team, who from somewhere have inflicted defeat on one of the best and most informed teams in the land. It's finished 4-3 to Manchester United after extra time.
The Athletic.